This is a Pinball News production.
I've been coming to Expo for 27 years. Dug out some of the original badges. That's 85 through, I guess, 90. And I've got all those on a ribbon in my building. So just thought I'd share that with you. In 1991, I first exhibited. That's my buddy Greg. They called it Wisconsin Games then and changed it the next year to Pinball Exchange. But as Rob said, I've taken a couple years off from exhibiting. But from 1991 to 2009, I brought over 400 pinball games to Pinball Expo in my booth. And really had a lot of fun meeting many of you and keeping the hobby alive. I always like to make a little fun of Rob and Mike. And so I originally had Rob Burke, but we really know this is Rob Burke, except he went and shaved his mustache on me. So the next time I speak, I'm going to have to come up with some kind of a new gig because that one's not going to work anymore. A little bit about why I like pinball, my Tommy Pin story. I have an older brother. He's 10 years older than I am, and the last thing he wanted to do was babysit me. So he would take me up to the local bowling alley, give me a handful of dimes, put me in the game room. I remember sitting on stools, reaching my arms as far out as I could, and he'd go bowl with his friends, and the best part is he'd get paid for it, because my parents never knew he sent me off in the game room, and I sure wasn't going to tell them, because I enjoyed playing the pinball. So we've spent my life growing up playing pinball. When I was a teenager, we'd go on the family vacations, and any game room, any arcade that I could find, I'd make sure that I went into and played. Then I kind of moved on to college, and that was my minor. Didn't help me get a job, but it sure was a lot of fun. And I was in college from 76 to 80, so it was that transition from the last of the EM games to the new solid-state games. Though I've always had a preference to the EM games. After college, I got married. My wife Penny's here today, so thank you for putting up with me for 30 years. I like pinball, but being married, I figured, well, that's the end of it. I'm never going to play pinball again. But being a good sport, she let me answer an ad in the paper, and it was for a Gottlieb Card Tricks. And the guy wanted $150 for it. It was a couple miles from my house. Drove over there, and I skillfully negotiated him down to $140, and then had to figure out how to get the thing in the trunk of my 73 Buick. Managed to discover the head came off, which was a good thing, and wedged the game in to the trunk, sticking out of the trunk. Unfortunately, it wasn't too far to drive home, but it definitely drew some attention, and a lot of people were looking at it. So it took us about 3 weeks to get that game put together, get it playable, figure out what a schematic was, figure out where to get rubber rings, and that was in January of 82, and we played the heck out of it. And in August of 82, for my birthday, my wife bought me my second game, which was a Gottlieb Mini Pool. And pinballs are kind of like potato chips. You really can't stop with one. You get that first one, you get that second one, then you buy five, then you buy 10. And then you realize you absolutely have no space anywhere. So in the 30 years of collecting, I've probably owned about 1,000 machines. Currently, I have 250 machines. 230 of them are set up. We've got, it started out as a 3,000-square-foot building, and as of October 1st, it is now a 9,000-square-foot building. I've been picking up some arcade games, so that new wing is going to be a lot of the arcade games. But it's been a lot of fun. They were in basements. They were in our living room till 5 years ago. My kids would go over to other people's houses and wonder why they had furniture in their living rooms. They're supposed to have pinball machines. But, that was special with us. So we set out to collect all the Gottlieb machines, the wedge heads. There's 85 models. Some had both Attaball and Replay from 1960 to 1978. And took about 9 years to do it, but managed to get them. The last one that I had to find, which I actually bought on eBay, was a Gottlieb Atlantis. I had found a TKO a couple of months before that. So now we've got the games, and it'll probably take another 10 years to get them restored. Started picking up Williams games and two players and four players, and I've got some pictures, so you'll be able to see some of that. But the one thing I always remember, and I heard it at one of the first expos, was a quote from Harry Williams about why pinball is so special. And that quote is, because the ball is wild. All your video games, all your console games, it's programmed. It may look like it's wild, but it's really not. Pinball is a free form, and it's an art form as well. So anyway, let's take a look at the collection. When you walk in the door, you're going to see this sign. The good Lord does not subtract from your life the amount of time you spend playing pinball. So just another reason to play lots and lots of pinball. And of course, every pinball building has to have a mascot. And this is our mascot, made entirely from pinball parts and video game parts. Back at Expo, I think it was in 2003, Rob would have the art contests. And a guy from Kentucky built that. He told me it took him about 60 hours to build it, and obviously it won first place. And I fell in love with it, and I said, well, how much do you want for it? And he said, well, I got about 60 hours in it, and $20 an hour, oh, how about $1,200? And I went, no, I don't like it that much, because that would be probably four games that I could buy. So after some haggling, I ended up trading him two pre-flipper wood rails. And he was happy, and I was happy, and that's been in the building ever since. So for those of you that ever come and visit, you'll get a chance to see that. In that same room, which was the original main room, I've got what I call my Big Seven. Those are my favorite new games to play. Junkyard, Arabian Nights, Star Trek, obviously Adam's Family, Twilight Zone, there's a Theater of Magic, and way on the end, if you can tell by the ball launcher, that's an Indiana Jones. So those are a lot of fun. But one of the things that I'm proudest of and that I enjoy the most along that row isn't a game, but it's that back glass hanging on the wall. That is the actual space mission back glass that hung in Steve Kordak's office at the Williams plant. And a number of years ago, in 2004, he donated it to the charity auction. And I said there was no way I was leaving without that. He had that in a Grand Prix. And the bidding got pretty ferocious. I think I had to go up to $115, but was very proud. And I was also fortunate enough that Steve was there that night, so I had him sign both the front and the back of it. And you know, if most people come in and look at it and go, oh, that's a nice back glass. But the people that know pinball history and know Steve Kordak certainly can appreciate it, because without him, a lot of the features that we have today wouldn't be available. So the other side of the main room, I've got some of my favorite two-player Gottlieb EMs and, of course, a Challenger. And I'll tell you, when we open up the building and we have people come over, a lot of them just stop and stare at that Challenger. They can't figure out what it is, you know, and attempt it at competitive two-player pinball. So then I challenge them to play it. And the first time that play field tilts and moves, most of them go like this because they think they broke the game. But that's a pretty good one. That one came out of Canada. Gottlieb had only made 125 of them for the U.S., The operators hated them because they took up so much space. And then an operator in Canada thought they were a good idea, and I think they did another run of 100 or 125, and most of those sat in boxes in that operator's warehouse. Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's new information for me. I certainly haven't seen that many. But thank you, David. And then this is in the main room. This is the Gottlieb room. From Flipper to TKO, I got several pictures in there. That's in the back wall. That's just a different view. Here's down the line. And what I try to do when I get a game, the first thing I want to do is make it playable. I'll come back later and do the cosmetics, but I want to make sure it's complete and I want to get the parts going. So at one time I thought, well, I'll do one game a week. It's more like two games a year. But at some point, I hope to have the time to do it. This is just down another row. And then along that back wall, what I've done over the years is I understood there were 16 Williams reverse wedge heads. I think, Rob, you gave me that number. Only one of them was both an attaball and a replay. That was Zigzag and Wingding. But that's along the back wall. Those are the 16 wedge heads. So this is kind of the wedge head room. Just another picture of it. Now, when we moved into the first unit, I suppose I should say it was 2003 we bought the first unit. It was 3,000 square feet. Filled that very quickly, never thought I would. Picked up another 1,500 square feet in an adjacent unit, in 2005, filled that right away. In 2009, filled up the other front half, so now we are up to 6,000 square feet. And October 1st, just 3 weeks ago, I picked up the unit next to that, which is a virgin 3,000 square feet. So I'm up to a total of 9,000 square feet. And as I mentioned, hopefully we'll get all my arcade games finally set up in that new space. But this was this is what we call the middle building. Just another row of some of the 80s games that we enjoy playing. And then on that far wall, what I've started to do in that corner is see how many of the electromechanical versions of the early solid-state games I can find. So I've got a Cleopatra and a Close Encounters that aren't in that row yet. But the problem is, as I fill one collecting element, then I have to find something else to go get. So it's the EMs right now of the early solid states. Just one more picture down the other wall. And then I've kind of got a riddle here. I was hoping Wayne Nyans was here. But anyway, I picked this up from an operator in northern Wisconsin. I thought it was a pro football when I saw the side cabinet. But when I look closer, it's a flying carpet. The back glass, the play field, the inside of the game is a flying carpet. And for those of you that know pro football, you put the ball in play by pushing the flipper. This actually has a plunger. There's no serial number inside it on the ball apron. And the games were made several months apart. And I don't know if it was a prototype. I don't know if the operator did it, but the fact there's no serial number. So I was hoping I could find out this mystery. Maybe Gottlieb just had some extra cabinets. I've checked that play field against the other flying carpet I have. I can't find any differences, so don't know that it was a sample game. But anyway, that's my mystery game. I got that at Chicagoland a couple of years ago. The next few slides are just some of the games in my collection that are significant. This is the Baffle Ball. I mentioned that, the first commercially successful game. This is called Sunshine Derby. It's a 1936 Gottlieb, and it's actually a payout game. There are little doors on the bottom that you would push, and you could get your money. Gottlieb, at one time, said they never made payout games, and they tried to distance themselves from the payout games, and Bally really became the source for that. But this is a Gottlieb payout. And then, of course, Humpty Dumpty, the first flipper game with the six flippers. Picked that up a number of years ago. I think that was probably my second Woodrail. I love baseball-themed games. This is an exhibit, 1948 baseball. I just picked up a Williams Lucky Inning. Hopefully I can get that going soon. And, of course, the first Attaball game. The early production was still a Woodrail, and I understand there's less than five of those known. Last person I knew that had one was Steve Engel from Mayfair Amusements. But that's an early metal rail. And then the whole flipper series, I think, are great games. Each one has its own unique features. Flipper Fair, the Flipper Parade. And then again, one of my favorite games. Pretty challenging game because you have to get the bumpers in order. But Majorettes, and that also was a fairly low production game. I think there were only about 500 of those made. Is that close, David? About 500 of those? All right. And, of course, Slick Chick. Everybody wanted Slick Chick. That was the hot game. But it wasn't an Attaball, so I didn't pick that up for years. But have it in the collection. Hurdy Gurdy, one of the first games I had with the animated back glass. Actually, about 15 years ago, I reproduced those monkeys. I reproduced 50 of them, and it was sold out in about 6 months. There may still be a few floating around. And, of course, I can't leave out the Williams games. Probably my favorite Williams game, either this or Vagabond. But interesting piece. And there's the Vagabond. That was the first game to have drop targets. And then, again, as I mentioned, some of the manufacturers did two versions of games, a replay game and an Attaball game. That was really to get around some gambling laws. There were three states where you couldn't win replays. That was considered gambling: Wisconsin, New York, and Connecticut. And so they made the Attaball game so you could continue the game you were playing, and then it was considered a game of skill, as opposed to matching or beating a score and winning a free game. So obviously, growing up in Wisconsin, I was partial to the Attaballs. Dimension, again, great game from the early 70s. One of the first games to have the continuous rows of drop targets. And then Flipper Pool and Banka Ball. A couple of good games. A few minor differences on the play field. And this is a sleeper. When I tell people I like Batter Up, they laugh at me. But it's really a fun game to play. Maybe they should have done different graphics, but the very targets, the position of the pop bumpers, and I just like the fact that you can score two ways. You can get points and you can get the runs. That didn't sound right. Not the run. You can get the runs. We'll have to edit that out, Rob. But anyway, and this is another sleeper game that I enjoy. This was the first very target game. It's two-player Gottlieb, and it actually plays quite fast. It's got a ball return lane, it's a lot of fun. And again, I said the last wedge that I needed, and that was an eBay purchase, was this Atlantis. I have mixed emotions about eBay. I'm sure most of you do, too. I love it because I can find obscure stuff, but I hate it because everybody thinks their game's worth $2,000. A lot of times I have to explain to people what they ask for it and what it sells for are drastically different. So let's go find one that's sold. Next slide. In 2007, when I last spoke, this was my workbench. Nice and neat and orderly, and perhaps Scott can relate to this, because today this is my workbench. I had to add levels and tiers, and it's full of stuff. But one of the things I've been working on, because it's always been frustrating to me, I've been working on a specialized pinball multi-tool. Cleans contacts, removes light bulbs, and generally any game you can't fix, you can use this multi-tool on. Hopefully I'll have it available next year. This is a picture of it next to my Gold Strike. You know, there's not much that can't fix. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about our very first game. That was the Card Tricks. I remember the birthdays of my kids. Well, that's the birthday of my pinball addiction, January 11th, 1982. And again, as I said, I got it home. I had no idea how it worked or what to do with it, but I figured if I took all the parts off, I'd figure something out. So we stripped the play field, took the back glass out. If you notice, there's a bunch of peanut cans along that little edge there. I had a peanut can for posts. I had a peanut can for the rubbers, for the plastics, and I figured if I kept them all orderly, I could put it back together. But I couldn't put it back together, so I had to call in a couple of specialized pinball techs, and in no time, they had the game going. But now I have to give you a little explanation. The one playing the game is my wife. Back before we had kids, we would play poker, and I dared my wife and her friend Leslie to help us out at our poker match. So it was pretty great because we're sitting around playing poker. All we had to do was that. We had a beer in our hand. But the problem is she only did that once. And then we started having kids, and any hope was gone. But here's that game today in the collection. That is still the original game. I've had chances to upgrade and get better card tricks, but it would be like trading in one of your kids. And speaking of kids, it's very important in the hobby to involve your family, and there's never a point where they're too young or too old. So this is my son when he was 18 months old. He had a Wingding in his bedroom. It was right next to the crib. And the debate on this picture for years has been whether that diaper was full or not. But I guess when he's playing pinball, it really doesn't matter. So again, he's about 18 months here. His first pinball expo was 1989. He's about 2.5 years there. And that's a firepower. And he called that the game that goes bang. He loved to play the game that goes bang and blow things up. And I think that really affected his later life because as soon as he got out of high school, he joined the Marine Corps. And I put this in here as a plug because we need to support our troops. We need to thank our veterans. He did 2 tours in Iraq with a sniper infantry unit and 1 tour in Afghanistan. And in Afghanistan, he suffered some injuries that required him coming home early. Otherwise, I think he was going to re-up, make a career of it. He's doing very well today and is actually back in school on the GI Bill. So thank all of you for paying for his college. But for any of you that are Marines, Semper Fi. Now, this is kind of the horror story. You're either going to love this picture or it's going to bring great joy to you. This was one of the warehouse buildings that I had before I moved into the building, and now it's been passed along to Don Caldwell. And I paid $35 a month for that. It was in the basement of an 80-year-old strip mall. And everything's up on boards because if it rained, you'd usually get a good inch of water. Is that fixed now? Okay. But anyway, for all the expos that I used to do, we lugged those games up and down the stairs. And it took its toll. That's probably why my knees are bad now. But a lot of times people ask, when you pick up games or you're working on games, what are some of the horror stories or what are some of the interesting stories? And I've got a list of things that I found in games. I actually, in a coin box, found Polaroid pictures of the seller's girlfriend. And I figure they were in there because his wife didn't like them. I bought a couple of games. It was a Friendship 7 and a Wing Ding. And I was loading the games up. I had paid the seller, and it was time to load the games up. And all of a sudden, this car comes screeching in the driveway. And this, probably 20-something kid with long hair came running over to me and said, What are you doing? I said, well, I'm loading up the pinball games. Well, no, they're mine. I said, no, I just paid the guy. You know, they're mine. And the dad overheard it and came and pretty much shut the kid up and told him, no, I sold the games, you know, leave it alone. And I thought, that's really strange. You know, if that kid was that attracted to the games, I have no idea why, the dad would sell them. Well, I got them home, and neither one had front door locks, so I had to drill the locks out. And in the Friendship 7, in the coin box, was a nickel bag of pot. So it made it very clear to me right away why that kid did not want that game to be sold. And, of course, I properly disposed of it. You know, of course, everybody's got the dead mouse stories. You know, that's fairly common. But I actually found a mummified crow inside of a game. And I have no idea how it got there. But it was kind of tangled up in one of the wire harnesses. And literally, you could take it out and, you know, hit it, and it would knock. I found a checkbook in a game once. That was pretty interesting. I had the register and everything. I knew how much the guy made. I knew what his interests were. And I called him back and said, I found your checkbook in the game. And he said, oh, that's an old one. You can just throw it away. Wow, okay, I did. I found eyeglasses in a game. And this was a game where the guy said it didn't work and he never tried to fix it. Well, okay, you never tried to fix it, but your eyeglasses were in it. So, you know, just interesting things. And all of us that have been in the hobby for a while can share stories about that type of stuff. My best find was a $25 hurdy-gurdy. My cheapest find was a $5 Williams Soccer. Probably the farthest I ever traveled to get a game was from Milwaukee down to Atlanta, Georgia. It was a Dodge City in beautiful shape, and my wife's sister lived in Atlanta, so we all drove down there. And then I found this Dodge City, and I bought it and realized I'm not going to have this game and my family of four fit in the van to drive home. So we ended up buying airline tickets and flew my wife and daughters home just so my son and I could drive back with the Dodge City. My biggest disappointment, somebody called me and said, I heard you collect pinball games. I went, yep. They said, I have an absolutely mint Captain Fantastic, and I want $100 for it. I went, wow. So some of you guys know where this is going. I sped over there, and it was the home use version, and I had kind of committed to the guy on the phone, so I had to give him the $100 and load it up. Anyway, we all live and learn. Just share with you a couple of the pinball milestones. I've always found this interesting, some of the firsts and lasts and things like that, and this is also really good at filling some time. The very first commercial game was Baffle Ball. Bally's first game, again, was the Ballyhoo, sold 75,000 units. Harry Williams first introduced the tilt mechanism in 1932 in a game called Advance. The flippers came into play in the late 40s. Humpty Dumpty was the first flipper game in 1947. And based on the research I've done, and David, you can help me out here, I believe Sonny was the first Williams game with flippers. Melody was the first Bally game with flippers. A Bermuda was the first Chicago coin game with flippers, and I used to have one of those. Ginkgo's first game was triple action with flippers, and Exhibit Supplies was build-up. So if any of you know any different, let me know. But that's what I've been able to find out. Williams developed the first thumper bumper in 1948 on a game called Saratoga. But Gottlieb took it a little bit further and developed the first pop bumper in 1949 on buttons and bows. The first trap hole was a 1952 Gottlieb quartet, and the first drop holes, which became one of the most frustrating things in all pinball machines, was Queen of Hearts, which was a Gottlieb in 52. The first real scoring game was a Williams 1953 Army-Navy. The first four-player game was Gottlieb Jumbo. That was in 1954. And then the first metal leg games. The first one I could find was Gottlieb's Easy Aces in 1955. And then a couple years later, Williams put out Gay Paris, and that was their first metal leg game. The first multi-ball game, most of you should know that, the Bally Balls of Poppin', that was in 1956. And there were a few games in between that had multi-ball, but it really didn't hit again until Firepower, the electronic age, in 1980. First roto targets was on Gottlieb Majestic. The first match feature was on a Williams Reno. The last bulb scoring game that Gottlieb made was Dancing Dolls. For Williams, it was a 1961 spaceship. And, of course, the first flipper was the Attaball game, Gottlieb Flipper. And that was also the first metal rail game that Gottlieb made. The last wood rail that Gottlieb made was Cupid Doll. The last bulb scoring game Williams made was Spaceship. That was in 1961. And then we got into, again, the games that I like. Vagabond was the first drop target in 62. Airport was the first vary target in 69. And then just a few other ones. Anybody here know what the first wide body game was? It was made in 1977 by an off-brand manufacturer. Atari made it. Yeah, the Atarians was the very first wide body game in 77. And this is an easy one, the first talking pinball. Gorgar, exactly. So, you know, I like trivia like that. And over the years, I've tried to pull some of that stuff together. But anyway, when I have a little fun, we're going to play Guess the Game. I've taken pictures of some plastics on the game, and hopefully we've got some folks that can figure it out. I'm going to start out with a hard one, though. Does anybody know what game that's from? No. Now, see, I stump most people on that one because it's an oddball game, the Black Sheep Squadron, the Astro game. So, you know, if anybody would have got that, I would have been pretty impressed. Though I bet some of you have that in a warehouse, and you just haven't figured it out yet. Next one should be a little bit easier for the Gottlieb two-player collectors. Anybody know that one? Wild West, but the Attaball version. Yep, Lariat. No, it's same plastic set as Wild West. Here's for our Bally fans. King Tut, but of course the one I have is a King Rex because I'm from Attaball territory. So how about this one? This one I figured might be tough. It's an early 60s Gottlieb. Fashion show, I'm impressed. Yep, that I picked that game up out of a basement and it looked like it was never played, just in perfect shape. All right, got a couple more. This one, the Williams guy should know this one. Four Roses. Exactly. Again, that's a great game. All right, how about this one? All right, there we go. And that's probably the prize of my collection. It's a new old stock playfield and a new old stock back glass. And I had Bill Davis in Rockford, I don't know if any of you know him, repaint the cabinet. He does an excellent job, but it takes 2 to 3 years to get something through. But if you're not in a hurry, I would highly recommend him. He just does phenomenal work. And, of course, we got to have a wood rail in here. Anybody know that one? No? No? Ah, stumped you. World Beauties. And now here's an easy one from the solid state stage. Yeah, that's the Black Knight. And then that one should be pretty easy, too. Yeah, that's Twilight Zone. You know, the guy in there selling those little LED strips, I put one of those behind the door and have it change colors, and it's really cool. So, you know, I'm not usually big on adding toys to my games, but that one I did. All right, here's the last one. Should be a giveaway with the letters. Yep, a Roller Coaster Tycoon. I've got that, an Elvis Gold, and a Ripley's in the basement, along with Whitewater and Creature from the Black Lagoon. So I've only got 5 games at home, but they're all games that I enjoy playing. Have a little bit more fun. Call this the match game. So we'll start with games. And Of course, it originally started with the marbles, and then it progressed to tabletop games, then it progressed to the electromechanical games, then it progressed to solid state, and I think sometime in our life, we're going to see the virtual reality games, where actually you can put on the headgear, and you got the gloves on, and you can do the flippers, and somehow I don't know that that would be very much fun, because you can't nudge the game or tilt the game, but that technology's coming pretty soon. So then there's bumpers. Of course, everybody knows about jet bumpers, and of course we've got pop bumpers, and then most of you here, this will probably be your favorite one. These are called Pam bumpers. The game's not all that fun, but it's got fairly decent artwork. And of course, then there's flippers. So we've got the short flippers, we've got the long flippers, and I'm going to warn you, I had this back in my 2007 presentation, and I wanted to update it for the laugh line, but there was nobody that would fit better than this. Banana flippers. I think this, you know, he was thinking to himself, so your name's Monica. But I'm not sure. And of course, then we have the heads. We've got wedge heads. And we have reverse wedge heads. And of course, trying to be politically correct, we have pinheads. Now, when I did it in 2007, it was Bush and Cheney, so I'm giving equal time. But really, what we're looking for in 2012 is a family values candidate for president, and I urge all of you to support Homer Simpson. All right, and of course, then we have cabinets. We have the wood rail games. We have the metal rail games. And I want to give equal time, since I already picked on Rob, we have wide body games. So I don't know if Mike made it in here, but anyway. And now a couple of plugs. One of the things that keeps this hobby going is the publications. The only one that's really still going and still consistent and is well represented here at Pinball Expo is the Pin Game Journal. If you don't subscribe to it, I would urge you to subscribe to it. And if you complain about its tardiness or its publisher, get over it, because this isn't Jim's full-time job. Jim does this because of his love of the hobby and to help us stick together. So there's my plug for Pin Game Journal. And then again, shows. Obviously, Expo is the grandfather of all shows, but there's other great shows around the country. Remember, back in 1985, this was the show. And now we've seen it spawn regional shows, the West Coast, the East Coast. And I'm going to plug a little-known show that's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Started about 10 years ago with a bunch of guys that like console games. And they would come together and play their games. And then it kind of evolved into some video games. And there were a lot of video games there. And over the last few years, it's really taken on an interest in pinball. They had almost 3,000 people attend the show last year, and it's all the different disciplines. It's the console guys, the video game guys, and the pinball guys. And I would urge you to check out the Midwest Gaming Classic. The dates, Saturday, March 24th and March 25th. They have a website. You can get the information on it. But it would be nice to continue growing shows. And for those of you that are in this area, it's not that much farther of a drive. At the end, it was open to begin with. It's closed now, and I would be happy to take any questions, comments, or advice. Yes, sir.
How did you hear about the
I was at the Chicagoland show, and Mike Pasak had a booth there. And he had a couple of pinball parts, and I was telling him I was fairly new to collecting and where could I get parts. And he handed me a flyer for the very first Pinball Expo. Yes. Good question, because I probably spent thousands of dollars putting in, 40 20-amp circuits, and I've determined I can run about 8 games per 20-amp circuit. So the community that I'm in wouldn't let me do extension cords, so I had to make extension cords and hardwire them. So basically I put gang boxes at 4, 16, 24, and 30 feet. And if you notice from those pictures early on, I have the games in rows. That's so I can accommodate that. But I've had to have the electricians come in and add extra circuits. And now with picking up that third unit, that's a bunch of 10-amp breakers. So I'm going to have to figure out what to do there. But it was planned out. When I first moved into the building and plugged all the games in, it got dark really fast because I wasn't prepared for the electrical pull. Anything else? Well, good. Well, thank you very much for your attention. Hopefully I'll be back exhibiting next year. And if you have any other comments, catch me in the exhibit hall. And appreciate your time.